नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
As I am in eternal form,
as I am in eternal form,
aham,
aham,
myself,
myself,
yata,
yata,
as much as,
as much as,
bhavaha,
bhava,
transcendental existence,
transcendental existence,
yat,
yat,
those,
those,
rupa,
rupa,
various forms and colors,
guna,
qualities, karmaka, activities, tata, so and so,
eva,
certainly, tattva vijnanam,
factual realization,
astu,
let it be,
te,
unto you,
mat,
my,
anugrahat,
by causeless mercy.
Translation. All of me, namely my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, color, qualities and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The secret of success in understanding the intricacies of knowledge of the Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, is the causeless mercy of the Lord. So, there, Srila Prabhupada, in the very first sentence, pretty much sums up that this is about three pages in this, two and a half. But that sentence there is particularly important. I'll just read that again. The secret of success in understanding the intricacies of knowledge of the Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, is the causeless mercy of the Lord. Even in the material world, the father of many sons discloses the secret of his position to his pet sons. The father discloses the confidence unto the son whom he thinks worthy. An important man in the social order can be known only by his mercy only. Similarly, one must be very dear to the Lord in order to know the Lord. The Lord is unlimited. No one can know him completely, but one's advancement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord can make one eligible to know the Lord. Here we can see that the Lord is sufficiently pleased with Brahmaji, and therefore he offers his causeless mercy to him, so that Brahmaji may have the factual realization of the Lord by his mercy only. In the Vedas also, he said that a person cannot know the Absolute Truth, personality of Godhead, simply by dint of mundane education or intellectual gymnastics. One can know the Supreme Truth if one has unflinching faith in the bona fide spiritual master as well as in the Lord. Such a faithful person, even though illiterate in the mundane sense, can know the Lord automatically by the mercy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, also, it is said that the Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone, and he keeps himself concealed from the faithless by his yogamaya potency. Because that there's also a very important statement, because here Krishna is explaining to Brahmaji that by factual realization, tattva vijnanam, let it all be factually realized, awakened within Brahmaji by factual realization. And so this vijnana. And of course, we saw that in the previous verse, there were four things that Lord Brahma was going to hear about from Krishna in the four seed verses beginning from 33 to 36. Those four things, these four verses which are coming up, verses 33 to 36, they're the actual seed four verses of the Bhagavatam. Just as the Bhagavad Gita has four seed verses, there's 8, 9, 10, 11. The Srimad Bhagavatam has four seed verses from which the whole Srimad Bhagavatam expands. And Krishna, in his Vishnumurti, is going to reveal that to Brahmaji. And it described yesterday in the purport that those four things which are answering Brahma's questions are: what are the forms of the Lord both in matter and in transcendence, and how are the different energies of the Lord working, how does the Lord play with these different energies, and how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? So this second one, so, the first one, what are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and transcendence, is describing transcendental knowledge, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then how the different energies of the Lord working, one who has vijnana or realization, such a person can distinguish between how the material energy is working and how the spiritual energy is working. Here, as Prabhupada mentions in his purport, that this is one of the ways that the material energy and the spiritual energy work. That Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone, and he keeps himself concealed from the faithless by his yogamaya potency. So, by the spiritual process, there is vijnana, realization that to be able to perceive the spiritual energy is acting to reveal the spiritual truths of the Personality of Godhead, and his yogamaya potency, expanded as mahamaya, is acting to conceal the knowledge of the Lord. One who has realization can distinguish that, therefore can understand the Supreme Lord and can understand how he is acting, and can distinguish between material activities and spiritual activities. Even on the devotional path, sometimes well, all the time, actually, neophyte devotees struggle to distinguish between what is a spiritual activity in devotional service and what is a material activity, that they're dovetailing some material propensities. So this is one of the subject matters of these four seed verses. To the faithful, the Lord reveals himself in his form, quality and pastimes. The Lord is not formless as wrongly conceived by the impersonalists, but his form is not like one that we have experienced. The Lord discloses his form even to the extent of measurement to his pure devotees, and that is the meaning of Yavan, as explained by Srila Jiva Goswami, the greatest scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Lord discloses the transcendental nature of his existence. The mundane wranglers make mundane conceptions of the form of the Lord. It is said in the revealed scriptures that the Lord has no mundane form. Therefore, persons with a poor fund of knowledge conclude that he must be formless. They cannot distinguish between the mundane form and the spiritual form. According to them, without a mundane form, one must be formless. This conclusion is also mundane because formlessness is the opposite conception of form. Negation of the mundane conception does not establish a transcendental fact. So the mundane scholars try to conceive of what is spiritual by just negating by the process of negation, that if this is mundane, then spiritual must be the opposite of that. But that's not always the case. Therefore one would, by that mundane logic, one would conclude that if in the material world we have form, then spirit must be without that material quality, means spirit must be without form. But that is not a fact. Actually, the Lord has form and even measurement. And then, so, you know, therefore we can say that Krishna is just a little bit higher than Radharani, right? He's just a couple of inches higher or something. There's some, I think if you read the Sri Radha Krishna Ganadesha Deepika, you know, it tells you, you know, and Madhu Mangala is a bit chubbier than some of the other, you know. So there's measurement, you know. But from a material concept, if God is unlimited, how can you say he's just a little bit bigger than Radharani or, you know, like this? He's not as chubby as Madhu Mangala. You know. So from a mundane conception, these things cannot be understood. And of course, we see that Lord Krishna appeared in the form of, his eternal form, which is manifest in the material world. His spiritual form is Damodar, little baby Krishna, who is just very small and cute in comparison to Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, even though Krishna is unlimited. So, you know, measurement is there, and it is an intricate part of his transcendental leelas. And of course, this is the mystery of the spiritual existence. It is based upon prema or love, and the spiritual abode manifest in such a way by the spiritual energy that although everything is unlimited and without material qualities, in order to facilitate love, all sorts of transcendental varieties exist for that purpose. Therefore, from the mundane conception, you know, people again, they will feel that you know, if there's no form in the spiritual world, because that's a mundane conception, how can there be, you know, different forms? And if there are no forms and no individuality, how can there be activities, and how can there be relationships, and how can there be love? These are all activities in the material world. So they compare our material forms and activities based upon sense gratification and lust, that if these qualities don't exist in the spiritual world, then how can there be activities? And but all of the variety of the spiritual world is manifest, even though it is without material qualities, in order to facilitate the various loving transactions which appear in primarily in five different rasas. So, in the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord has a transcendental form and that he can utilize any one of his senses for any purpose. For example, he can eat with his eyes and he can see with his leg. In the mundane conception of form, one cannot eat with one's eyes or see with his leg. That is the difference between the mundane body and the spiritual body of Satchit Ananda. The spiritual body is not formless. It is a different type of body of which we cannot conceive with our present mundane senses. Formless therefore means devoid of mundane form or possessing a spiritual body of which the non-devotee can have no conception by the speculative method. So, so actually, as the Lord's form is his senses interchangeable, that he can perform the activity of one sense with any of the other senses. Srila Prabhupada mentions that the jiva, you know, the spirit soul, also has that quality, but not to the degree that Krishna has. So the spiritual form that we have in the spiritual world, our senses are also not limited, you know, to the degree that they are here. That they're also somewhat interchangeable. We get a glimpse of that. We were discussing the other day in Bhakti by Bhava that, you know, every living entity actually has all the senses of sight, you know, eyes, ears, legs, arms, you know, so there are 10 different senses. And so there are 8,400,000 different species of life, and they all have all of those senses. They all have arms, they all have legs, they all have ears and eyes, and nose, mouth, genitals, rectum, like this, tongue. But those spiritual senses are covered by the material energy, so we get the subtle senses. So actually the senses are there in every living entity in a subtle form. Therefore in a tree, you know, in its, the spiritual body is there, and the spiritual legs are covered by the subtle material energy. So therefore, the name for a tree is called it's a pada. What is it, pada something? Means one who drinks through their legs. What is it?
Ankiva.
That you know, the Sanskrit name for a tree is one who drinks through his legs. So the tree actually has legs, and it drinks through its legs. You know, therefore, you know, the scriptures describe that when a person takes birth as a tree, that person is being punished because they, you know, if you try and stand somewhere in one spot, you know, say if we said today, you know, you all just stand, you know, in the courtyard and you don't move, you know, it'd be very, very difficult. You see people going up to give prasad and people doing this, people doing, you have to stand there. And if we say you stand there for a week, you know, you stand there for 100 years. You stand there for 5,000 years. So it's punishment because actually the soul in that tree's body has the subtle material senses of legs which it cannot use. It's being punished. You know, on the spiritual platform it has the senses of legs, and on the subtle platform, you know, the branch, the trunk, sorry, is the leg, but it cannot use it, and it has to drink through the leg. So it is a punishment. So, you know, there is some, it sort of helps us to perceive that, you know, ultimately all the senses are there within the spirit soul, and to some degree, even on a material platform, they can be interchangeable. So the spirit soul has these qualities. Unlimitedly, without material impediment on the spiritual platform, and Krishna has that quality unlimitedly. In other words, Krishna can eat through, as Prabhupada says here, he can eat with his eyes, but it is an unlimited quality that all over the universe people are making offerings to Krishna, and he is eating all of those offerings. You know, in Jagannath Puri, they're offering 52 offerings. You know, throughout the course of the day, he's eating those. And then in another temple, they're offering so many offerings. And here, they're making so many, in Los Angeles. So Krishna is eating all of those offerings. So he has that propensity unlimitedly. The jiva also has that interchangeable nature of the senses, but cannot, you know, perform the same activities unlimitedly as Krishna does. So the Lord discloses to the devotee his unlimited varieties of transcendental bodies. All identical with one another, with different kinds of bodily features. So, he is the one Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the one Lord, but he has unlimited bodies, even though he is, they are identical with one another. Some of the transcendental bodies of the Lord are blackish, and some of them are whitish, some of them are reddish, and some are yellowish. Some of them are four-handed, and some of them are two-handed. Some are like the fish and some are like the lion. All these different transcendental bodies of the Lord without any differential category are disclosed to the devotees of the Lord by the mercy of the Lord, and thus the impersonalist false arguments claiming the formlessness of the Supreme Truth do not appeal to a devotee of the Lord, even though such a devotee may not be very advanced in devotional service. So, in the Brahma Samhita, it mentions that the Supreme Lord, although he expands into many, you know, unlimited forms, they are identical in that it is the one Supreme Personality of Godhead And they are all as powerful as each other, in the sense that, and the example is given, that if you take one candle and then you just light up another candle, light up another candle, they all have the same burning power, but one is the original. So, in that sense, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the original source of all material and spiritual manifestations. If we make a distinction, we can make a distinction there. Therefore, sometimes, you see that when they have the appearance days of Lord Nrisimhadeva, or sometimes, especially Lord Ramchandra, even sometimes devotees think, oh, I'm not really a Ram Bhakta, I don't really take much interest in Ram, because, I'm a Krishna Bhakta, because Ram is, a lesser, there's something less in Ram, and I'm actually a Krishna Bhakta, because there's more in Krishna than you've got in Ram, so I'm not really, Ram Bhakta. But Ram is Krishna. It's the same person. And actually, many, many times in his lectures, even speaking on, Lord Ramchandra's appearance day and what have you, Srila Prabhupada explains, there is no difference, there is no... Lord Ramchandra is equally as powerful in all respects as Krishna. He may not display that in his pastimes as Lord Ram, but he is the same person. Just like Lord Narayan, we might say, "Oh, we don't worship. We're not interested in Lord Narayan. We're interested in Krishna because Lord Narayan is something lesser." But actually, we see that when the gopis were searching for Krishna, Krishna manifested his Narayan form. It's the same person. That Narayan form is the Narayan form who resides in Vaikuntha. Krishna manifested that Narayan form. They weren't interested because, the transcendental form of Krishna is particularly attractive and enchanting. But it is the same. It is the same personality of Godhead. So we should, when the gopis, sent a letter to Krishna, that they were feeling separation from Krishna, they were explaining to him that, you are, this incarnation, just as you are, Varaha, and you delivered the earth from the bottom of the Garbha Dukha Osha, you deliver us, we are, sunken in despair, an ocean of despair. You are Varaha, you deliver us. They're not seeing that. They know that these various manifestations, they are Krishna. It's all Krishna. They may not but they understand that their attraction, though, is only to Krishna, because that form of Krishna, where he displays his qualities, particularly of beauty, is unlimited. Sometimes people accuse Krishna, as we were saying, that mundane people think that there is, in the spiritual world, there can be no, attraction between male and female as we know in this world, and therefore when they perceive the activities of Krishna, they think, well, he is not God, he's like some lusty boy. He's always, having affairs with the gopis, and he has, married so many women, and like this, he's just so lusty, he's always, he's a woman hunter. That's what they think of Krishna. Actually, Krishna is the ultimate manifestation of beauty. And Therefore, all other forms of beauty are seeking out, even, you know, therefore the goddess of fortune, the unlimited goddesses of fortune, the expansions of Radharani, they are seeking out the beauty of Krishna. When just like the young gopis, they wanted Krishna to be their husband. You know, they prayed, Krishna is so beautiful, he's so wonderful, we would like him to be our husband. Therefore he fulfilled that desire and he stole their garments. Because practically when he did that, they were considered to be, you know, married. That a woman can only appear naked before her husband. So he actually fulfilled that desire that they wanted to marry Krishna by that. It was their desire. He fulfilled their desire. And people imagine that Krishna is lusty. But it's not. Actually, the various transcendental forms of beauty are seeking out Krishna because he is the ultimate attractive Madano Mahan beauty. But because he's unlimited, his transcendental energy is always expanding his beauty. And therefore, Radharani, who is the full manifestation of Krishna's energy, is called Madana Mahana Mohini. That she is attracting Krishna. So he is the ultimate manifestation of beauty. His energy is always expanding his beauty through his pastimes with his internal pleasure potency, Radharani, who expands as the gopis and ultimately as the queens of Dwarka and the goddesses of fortune. They all expand the beauty of Krishna unlimitedly. They make Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful and they make him more beautiful. Just like it describes that you get a beautiful gem and you place that gem within a gold setting, it becomes more and more beautiful like this. So the Lord discloses these truths of the Lord's transcendental forms to his devotees. But, and here it describes that, you know, someone describing Krishna as formless, that does not appeal to a devotee of the Lord, even though such a devotee may not be very advanced in devotional service. So we see that, I'll just read the rest of this purport and I'll come back to that. The Lord has unlimited number of transcendental qualities, and one of them is his affection for his unalloyed devotee. In the history of the mundane world, we can appreciate his transcendental qualities. The Lord incarnates himself for the protection of his devotees and for the annihilation of the faithless. His activities are in relationship with his devotees. So here, you know, we also see that in the third point, the third one, so we discussed jnana, vijnana, and the third point was how does the Lord play with his different energies? The Lord plays with his different energies in relationship with his devotees to enjoy the taste of prema bhakti in various rasas. And therefore the third aspect that the Lord will teach Brahmaji is about prema bhakti. So, the Lord incarnates himself for the protection of his devotees and for the annihilation of the faithless. His activities in relationship with his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of such activities of the Lord in relationship with his devotees, and the non-devotees have no knowledge of such pastimes. The Lord lifted the Govardhan hill when he was only 7 years old and protected his pure devotees at Vrindavan from the wrath of Indra, who was overflooding the place with rain. Now this lifting of the Govardhan hill by a 7-year-old boy may be unbelievable for the faithless, but for the devotees it is absolutely believable. The devotee believes in the almighty potency of the Lord, while the faithless say that the Lord is almighty, but we do not believe it. So a faithless person, yes, God is great. God is the greatest. And we say, yes, God lifted the Govardhan hill to protect his devotees. No, that's not, that couldn't be. Such men with a poor fund of knowledge do not know that the Lord is the Lord eternally, and that one cannot become the Lord by meditation for millions of years or by mental speculation for billions of years. The impersonal interpretation of the mundane wranglers is completely refuted in this verse, because it is clearly stated here that the Supreme Lord has qualities, form, pastimes, and everything that a person has. All these descriptions of the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead are factual realizations by the devotee of the Lord, and by the causeless mercy of the Lord, they are revealed to his pure devotee and to no one else. And of course, when Krishna says they are revealed to his pure devotee, we should also understand that they are revealed to the pure devotee even in the neophyte stage, to some degree, as it describes here, that false arguments claiming the formlessness of the Supreme Truth do not appeal to a devotee of the Lord, even though such a devotee may not be very advanced in devotional service. Therefore, we see that in the beginning of this movement, Srila Prabhupada said to his devotees that they should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They should chant his holy names, follow the four regulative principles, and worship the deity. And in this way, if they try to spread Krishna consciousness, because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, they would ultimately do good for themselves by becoming completely on the transcendental platform. They will develop pure love of God, Prema Bhakti, and they will go back to Godhead, and they will help others. So they just put their faith in this, even though in the beginning of this movement, the whole world was against the Krishna consciousness movement. And even some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, were somewhat against it or antagonistic, what is he doing? What to speak of, the Hindus, and, what to speak of the Western world and the atheists, and, the fundamental, or not the fundamentalists, but the Christians and the Muslims, and all against, and the governments who are fearing, our whole economic development is based upon cow killing, intoxication, and gambling, and illicit sex, and we have developed the world in such a way that we can enjoy these sinful activities unlimitedly, even under the guise of religious principles, and we are gaining so much economic benefit through peddling this sense gratification to the masses, and we are able to control the masses by meeting out little pinches of sense gratification for them, like this. So everyone was against Krishna consciousness. And of course, devotees were being thrown in jail, being bashed, sometimes killed, and so much opposition, so much bad publicity. That their relatives were leaving the devotees, their friends would leave them, like this. But they were completely faithful. Prabhupada said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's there in scripture. So even though the whole world is against us, we will go out and do what the spiritual master says and preach and follow. Now they weren't all Maha Bhagavat devotees. But the idea that, that God is without a form, or you know, that you know, there's no Krishna Leela, and you know, so many horrible thoughts like this did not appeal to them at all, even though they were neophyte devotees. And Prabhupada said in 1968, he was in Seattle, he said, "You are the representatives of Prahlad Maharaj." In another lecture in Mayapur in the late 70s, or the mid 70s, he said similarly, "You preach Krishna consciousness and you are the Prahlads of this world." And Prahlad Maharaj, he epitomizes this quality of just having faith in the instructions of the Guru and having faith in the Supreme Lord. He was not, you know, a very sophisticated great yogi. He was a 5-year-old boy. Even Gajendra the elephant, he's not even a human being. He also manifested the same qualities. He just had faith in the Lord. There was no sophisticated, elevated, you know, there's no material qualifications. They had faith in the Supreme Lord. And when one puts their faith, Narada Muni said to Prahlad Maharaj, he instructed him within the womb, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had faith. Yes, Krishna is God. He is my Father. He is supreme. He is the supreme, unlimited, powerful. Then what can Hiranyakashipu, what can my Father do? If God is the greatest, what can Hiranyakashipu do? He's like a little insect. He had faith. He was instructed. So by that quality, he attracted the love and causeless mercy of Lord Narasimhadev. In the same way, Gajendra, even though he's an elephant, he attracted the mercy of the Supreme Lord because he had that childlike, innocent, simple-hearted faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. And therefore, all the transcendental truths were revealed to them. And Lord Narasimhadev touched Prahlad Maharaj on the head and he offered the beautiful prayers which even the great demigods up to Lord Brahma and Lakshmi and all the sages and what have you, they all appreciate. You know, here's this little 5-year-old boy offering the most beautiful prayers, you know, which we are you know, inspired to hear and to learn from. And he's just this 5-year-old boy. He's been touched by the Lord because he got the causeless mercy, because he always maintained his faith in the Guru and the Lord. So similarly, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you can also, and as Prabhupada said, you can be representatives of Prahlad, you can be the modern, not that we imitate, that we are some nitya siddha, not in that sense, but you know, representatives of Prahlad, even, you know, neophyte devotees, representatives like that. Not that we become, you know, not meaning in an impersonal sense, but Prabhupada is saying, you can also get the touch of the Lord. He will touch you also. Because when you chant the holy names of the Lord, the Lord's lotus feet are dancing on your tongue. And you get the same benefit that Prahlad got. The same benefit that here, we might think, oh, Brahma was there at the beginning of creation, the Lord shook his hands. Yes, the Lord is shaking your hand, he is dancing, his lotus feet are dancing on your tongue daily, as often as you want to chant. You get the same benefit as Brahma, the same benefit as Prahlad Maharaj, the same benefit as Gajendra. By, and Krishna will fully reveal himself, And of course, the fourth point, which is being described by the Lord to Brahma, is the process of sadhana bhakti. You know, how Brahma may be instructed to discharge his duty entrusted to him, so that sadhana bhakti gradually brings one to the platform of prema bhakti, and by this, the whole process of devotional service from sadhana to prema is a development of faith, simply. And as that faith develops, more and more the Lord reveals himself, his name, his qualities, forms. And from the very beginning, though, one is completely protected by the mercy of the Lord, and the Lord is very much attracted to the devotee for that innocent, simple quality of having faith and depending upon the Lord, and then everything expands from there. This is, as Prabhupada says, this is the secret of success. In understanding the intricacies of knowledge of the absolute truth or the personality of Godhead is the causeless mercy of the Lord. If we depend upon our material qualifications, sometimes even people come to Krishna consciousness and still they're depending on their material qualifications. But this is not our process. Our process is to actually just depend upon the causeless mercy of the Sri Gurudev and the Supreme Lord, and by that process alone one makes advancement. And therefore the manifestation of that is that we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and come to that platform 16 rounds a day, follow the four regular principles, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no eating meat, avoid the offences. This is also very important, because one who has faith in Krishna, they reciprocate with devotees according to what Krishna enjoys. That those who are superior to them, they're very respectful and they serve them nicely. A faithless person, even sometimes very neophyte devotees, there's some envy still. Someone's more senior to them, they want to pick at them, criticize, somehow drag them down. In this way, they elevate by trying to drag everyone down. This is not very pleasing to Krishna. That is a sign of faithlessness, disregarding Krishna's process and depending on one's material qualification. Those who are subordinate to a devotee, the material way of dealing is to try and keep them suppressed. I will always be better than them. I will keep them down. I'll not let them get my position. And those who are peers, let me compete with them. I will compete with them until I am above them. Not that, let us share this great transcendental adventure of Krishna consciousness. These activities do not not a manifestation of faith, and they do not attract the attention of the personality of Godhead. So this a faithful devotee, they're very simple, innocent and pure hearted. They're non-duplicious in their activities with other devotees. They're non-duplicious in their activities with the Supreme Lord. And by this childlike innocence, like Prahlad Maharaj, they attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. And then, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, they advance in Krishna consciousness. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Thank you.
How do you explain causes arise as spiritual forms? How do they come to be the way that they are?
How do they come to be as they are? How do all the varieties of spiritual forms come to be as they are? Because they are eternally that way. Because the absolute truth is perfect and complete. Panamada, Panamada, Panamidam, Panapanamada, Chate, Punasha, Panamadaya, Panameva, Vishishite. It's the very nature, the absolute truth means the whole, everything. The absolute truth contains everything, and therefore everything is complete, because everything is there. And the absolute truth is eternal. So therefore everything is eternally complete and perfect. The absolute truth, as described in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, is independent, not depending on any other source to become complete or to, you know, deriving something that it doesn't have from some other source. It is the, and of course this is the second aspect that Krishna describes to Brahmaji, that apart from myself, anything which appears to be separate from me is simply illusion. I am the complete whole. If you imagine that something has been added over time from some other source, then that is illusion. So it is the very nature of the absolute truth to be the complete whole, and the complete whole therefore is eternally complete and perfect. Therefore, it is just the nature of the eternal, the absolute truth. Yeah. It's from a material concept, you know, that's hard to imagine from a material concept, you know, because in the material world everything is, it begins from some point, gradually add to it till we get something, you know, that the spiritual concept is different, that the absolute truth is eternal, and because the absolute truth is the complete whole, then of course the absolute truth is therefore completely perfect, and nothing. And because the absolute truth is the complete whole, that nothing can be added from a separate source or subtracted. That's just the nature of the absolute truth. Mm. Question from
When Indra was flooding Vrindavan, did that flood cover the whole planet or just that area?
Just that Vrindavan is right. Yeah. Mm. Just that area. Yeah. So you're thinking there may be some similarity between Noah's Ark? Some of those, if anything, it would be the other way around, that someone may have borrowed some of the pastimes from the scriptures and gradually developed them into some offshoot religion. If anything, it would be the other way around. But just like when Saint Paul was. Prabhupada says that Christianity basically is Paulism. Paul travelled throughout. He says that there's more Paulism than the teachings of Jesus in one sense, because Paul travelled throughout the world trying to establish Christianity, and he was competing with many different, you know, faiths who had gods who performed this miracle and that miracle, and you know, some say that in order to compete with them, that he attributed what they could do, then yes, Jesus also can do it, you know, what your God can do. So, you know, some say like that some aspects of the teachings of Christianity were actually added to in order to compete with the prevailing So, you know, that may be there, but the Vedas don't need to compete with other religions, because the Vedas are emanating from the complete absolute truth, as described, that whatever emanates from the absolute truth is complete and perfect in itself. And therefore the Vedas are complete and perfect in itself, and therefore there's nothing to be added or taken from. but other mundane conceptions of God may have to be adding or subtracting, because their mundane conceptions are never complete. So they may add or subtract different stories, but when they want to add or subtract, they may take from the Vedas this and that to make it more attractive. But the Vedas don't need to do that. Any other questions or comments? Jai, all worship Prabhupada.